Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I have to be honest, when I decided to start my podcast, I had some sort of idea about what it'd be like. But now that I'm actually doing it, I realize I really had no idea what I was getting into. You see, for 15 years, I spent most of my time working at one place. And well, for the most part, I just saw patient after patient, hour after hour. It was a really busy hospital, but that's beside the point. So at least in the work environment, conversations with new people for me were, well, providing treatment to a new patient. So now, don't get me wrong, I still love my clinical work. But doing this podcast is really exciting because every day I'm thinking about what information or message I hope to bring to anyone out there who's listening. And so now when I find myself really getting intrigued or touched by something I read or hear, I immediately start thinking, I wonder if this could be something for the show or who's behind this. And even though I really did just start this pretty recently, I can't tell you how inspiring it's been to see how many truly amazing people are out there doing such, well, amazing things. And I feel very fortunate when I do reach out to one of those amazing people and we connect and they come here on the show. And I just so happen to have one of those amazing people with me here today. So I was scrolling through my Instagram mindlessly one night and I came across something that definitely caught my attention. And I remember thinking, oh, I need to see who posted this. So I checked out this profile and I kept checking out her posts. And needless to say, our guest today is quite inspirational and I'm very excited for her to be here to discuss something I know many of you out there are struggling with. And even if you're not, this is sure to be a show full of some great information that I just don't think's discussed enough, if actually at all. So with that, I'm happy to introduce today's guest, Erica DeLeon. She runs a weight-inclusive, non-diet, outpatient nutrition practice in White Plains, New York. With more than 30 years of experience, she and her team help individuals with eating disorders and disordered eating to develop a positive relationship with food, weight, and body image. She is certified as an eating disorder dietitian with the International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals. And as an intuitive eating counselor, Erica is also certified as a body positive facilitator with the Body Positive Organization. Erica has written many professional articles on nutrition, is a frequent speaker on topics such as eating disorder treatment and prevention, and belongs to many professional organizations, including the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the International Association of Eating Disorder Professionals, and the Academy of Eating Disorders. Erica, as I said, I'm thrilled to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Christina. It's wonderful to be here.
So, you know, you have quite an impressive background. And before we dive into today's topic, is there anything you want to share with us about you, your background, maybe how you got on this career path?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, that I've been a dietitian for a very long time. I'm embarrassed to say it's like 35 years. And my career has really shifted as I've learned more and as we've learned more, in our community. My practice philosophy has shifted. You know, as a dietitian, I used to give people diets. It's what we did. We were so worried about weight. And I have learned through, unfortunately, you know, some experiences that intentional weight loss is very detrimental. It leads to disordered eating and eating disorders. And it's really kind of through this lens that I now work as a non-diet dietitian, recognizing that we need to learn to trust our body's wisdom around our hunger and our fullness. And, you know, that's really, again, it's taken me quite a while, but that's what I've learned during this whole course of my career, is the importance of being a non-diet dietitian, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And anyone who's listening to this show knows I'm very much against diets and for many good reasons. They perpetuate eating disorders and actually make everything worse. They don't actually work. I had a whole show on just that. So I really, I love that you're the anti-diet dietitian. But speaking of which, I do get so many questions from people just about that title alone. People may not know, should I see a nutritionist or a dietitian, or is there a difference between what a nutritionist is or a dietitian? Are they the same thing? I just think there's a lot of confusion and lack of information about what it is that you do. And just curious if you could clarify that for people who might be listening going, what's the difference, or why should I see somebody who's a dietitian or nutritionist?
So a dietitian is, it's a protected title. It is, you need to have a 4-year degree and you have to have certification and licensure. It means that you've achieved a certain educational level and training. We have to do internships. It's a very rigorous course of study. And the word nutritionist is not a protected category. I mean, honestly, anyone can say they're a nutritionist. And I want to make the point that there are certainly many, many people who are qualified to provide nutrition information who may not necessarily be a registered dietitian. But I think that if you're looking for someone to help with eating disorder recovery, you know, treatment for, you know, the diet casualty, a registered dietitian has a certain level of expertise. And that's really what the difference is, where it's a protected category, like a licensure, like being a licensed social worker or being a physician, you have to be licensed by the board. So we have an extra degree of, what's the right word? I guess surveillance to make sure we're providing the correct information. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. And like you, I'm also certified through the International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals as a specialist. But of course, I have a very different specialty in that I'm a psychologist. So if someone's out there struggling with disordered eating or body image issues and has a choice between seeing someone who's certified like you or someone who's not, could you explain what would be different about seeing and working with you versus someone who's not a specialist?
Yes, to be a certified eating disorder registered dietitian, it's an advanced credential. It means that you have achieved a competency in working with eating disorders. And I think that it's very important. I've seen clients harmed by other professionals. I'm embarrassed to say this, but not everyone really understands the nuances of treating eating disorders. It's very important to not talk about diets. It's very important to really help normalize eating and being in our bodies. And there is a lot of weight stigma in the world, as we know it, fat phobia. And it's not to say that dietitians, can be involved in sometimes perpetuating that harm, because there are different philosophies. But certainly to heal from an eating disorder, it's important to have someone who understands recovery and again, the nuances. So I do believe the IDEP certification is a very important one to look for when you're looking for a dietitian to help with your eating disorder. Yeah, thank you for asking that question.
Great. And I was telling you before the show, I wholeheartedly agree with having a dietitian on a treatment team for anyone who's got an eating disorder, because personally for me, when I had somebody on my team who was a dietitian and a specialist, that was the turnaround point for me in my treatment. So I really value everything you bring to treatment, and I know it's of such value. So I really wanted to clarify that for anyone out there who might think, oh, I don't need to see somebody who's a dietitian, but it's an essential part of treatment, really, I think. I find it interesting because, there's so many times on insurance panels, many of my patients say there's no specialist listed as providers. And so they aren't really able to see a specialist or know that they need to see one just for that alone. And I kind of equate it to medicine, really. You know, I wouldn't go see a podiatrist or a dermatologist if I needed chemotherapy for cancer, say, right? I go see an oncologist. However, in fields like ours, unfortunately, the idea of specialization just hasn't taken the same level of importance. And truly someone who has an eating disorder really does need to see a specialist.
I wholeheartedly agree. In fact, I'm working on a challenge to an insurance company because the client needs to be seeing a dietitian who is trained in eating disorders. And the insurance company is telling them that, well, there are other dietitians in your network, but they practice with diabetes and they practice with weight loss. And that's really not the way that you treat an eating disorder. So yeah, I do believe the specialty is so important in helping someone's recovery. And we really want to help we want to help you. If you're struggling, we want to help you right at the start, you know, to really learn to make peace with food and with your body. Like, what better thing is there in the world, in my opinion?
No, I'm with you. Believe me, you're speaking my language. Thank you for clarifying all that, because I know it's always so confusing and misunderstanding for so much misinformation out there. So thank you for that. Now, with all your experience and expertise, I know you could talk about so many things today that so many people could find helpful. And I know it's hard to kind of just pick one, but I know menopause is one topic that you know a lot about. So if you're okay with that, I'd like to just delve into that topic and discuss what you know and bring some clarity to the topic, if that's okay.
Of course, of course. Great. Do you have a question, or should I just start?
Well, I mean, we could just basically start with, you know, what menopause is and isn't, or if you want to start somewhere else, I will leave it to you. You really are well-versed in this, so.
Yeah, no. So, you know, menopause is one of the most commonly, it's the least talked about issue in women's health, because everyone who has ovaries, you know, everyone with a vulva will go through menopause. And I say that because it's not just women. And it's a very normal and natural part of the life cycle, just like adolescence and puberty. So perimenopause is a term that probably defines more of what people think about when they think about menopause. It's the period of time, usually like 7 to 10 years prior to menopause, where you go through a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of symptoms. You know, our hormone levels start to fluctuate, our ovaries start to produce less estrogen, and our progesterone levels switch and change. And that's really what causes symptoms. Whenever you see, you know, women saying, I'm having a hot flash, it's because the levels of estrogen are shifting in the body. And it's really the menopause is defined by the lack of menstruation for 12 months. So when a woman goes through a full year without periods, then we say she is in menopause, and she actually is menopausal for one day, then she's postmenopausal. So the things that you commonly hear, you hear perimenopause, and then there's postmenopause. And all of that is summarized by saying, oh, I'm in menopause. the common age is usually around 51. So most middle-aged, again, people, not just women, going through this process will be in perimenopause. And what concerns me as a dietitian and as a eating disorder professional is that because of this hormonal shifting in our body that nobody talks about, weight gain is a natural consequence, you know, and most people will gain some weight during midlife. And it's very, very challenging and stressful. And it's probably the most common thing I hear. I don't understand why I'm gaining weight around the middle. My waist is getting bigger. I'm not changing how I'm eating. Nothing is different. And so this weight, sort of our waist expanding, is really very, very normal and common as we get older. And it has to do with, believe it or not, when our estrogen levels decrease, because our ovaries don't make them anymore, our body fat actually produces a form of estrogen. So in essence, it's there to help us. It's because when we go through menopause, when we're in postmenopause, we are at risk of having heart disease. We end up having a higher risk of osteoporosis. So our bones are important. And estrogen really helps to maintain heart health and bone health. So it's kind of Mother Nature's way of helping us through this time by having a little extra body fat. So I really want everyone to hear it. I want to normalize it. I want to say it's not tragic. You may gain a little bit of weight, and it's really normal and really healthy. And the problem is that most people will go on fad diets and really try not to gain weight, and it leads to disordered eating and eating disorders. I think that's the message I want everyone to hear. We know, I'm going to give you a percentage, 13% of women over 50 have at least one eating disorder symptom. And I actually believe it's higher. So what that's saying is that it's a period of vulnerability for eating disorders, midlife. And so it's important to approach it with a what I call a non-diet perspective, thinking about how can we take care of our bodies in ways that we don't focus on intentional weight loss. We don't have to focus on our weight, but we can focus on taking care of ourselves by doing some stress management, perhaps meditating. We can think about how can we move our bodies in ways that feel good? How can we eat in a way that's nourishing and not depriving? So those are kind of the messages that I like to send around this time period. You know, I'm talking a lot. Is there anything I should add?
No. It's interesting. So if we could go back a little bit. So I can imagine somebody going, okay, so I get, maybe they would understand, okay, I need to gain weight, the estrogen that will help with, you know, some issues, some health issues. But, you know, why around the middle? Does it have a purpose or is it just random that the weight gain happens there? Like if somebody comes and asks you that, what would you say to them?
Yeah, it really has to do with the shifting hormones. So we actually end up having a higher testosterone level and a lower level of estrogen. And that shifts the weight in our body more towards the center. Like if you think about the way that a man is, and when they sort of go through middle age, they get like a little bit of a belly in the middle. That's more of the male pattern with their hormones. And so our hormones start to take on that profile. And again, it's very normal and natural. And we have to stop pathologizing it. I remember working with someone who was just, I'm going to say this, was obsessed with these last couple of pounds that she couldn't lose from this. And it became really problematic. So I just want us all to embrace our changing bodies. You know, we're not going to be the same as we were when we were in college or in high school or when we first got married. Our bodies change because we're getting older. And isn't that a wonderful thing? I wake up every day and it's a gift. So I want to invite people to shift their thinking that getting older is a blessing and, you know, not a curse. And although the environment and the world that we live in would like to tell us so, you know, anti-aging and, you know, capitalism, everyone's trying to sell us on something being wrong with our bodies. Having gray hair is wrong. Having wrinkles is wrong. Gaining weight is wrong. And I want to just challenge all of that because This is who we are. We are becoming older and wiser. So that's a different way of thinking about our bodies.
Well, I think you're saying the things that I hope everyone out there is really taking in is there is so much toxicity, so many toxic messages about needing to change or defy, you know, what's coming instead of embracing it and saying this is actually what's normal and this is to be accepted and appreciated and valued and loved. And wow, look, you know, you get the chance to get older. You get the chance to go through this. And here's what it looks like. And for everyone to just, like you said, normalize it. Like, oh, anticipating it and saying, okay, this is going to happen and it's okay. And everyone goes through it and looks like that versus everyone has to fight it. And if you don't, something's wrong with you and something's wrong with your body. And this feeling of out of control, like you kind of alluded to, it's like, I'm doing something wrong. I must be eating too much or not exercising enough, or what am I doing? I need to control this with, you know, dieting, and I need to make sure I undo this kind of thing. And it causes a lot of stress.
Exactly. And, you know, the messages aren't just coming from, you know, diet culture. The messages are coming from our medical professionals. So it's in, even if you look online and you look for what am I supposed to eat going, you know, as I'm going through menopause, which is really perimenopause, it all talks about don't gain weight. And that messaging, I think, really does us a lot of damage. Instead, I would love to see the messaging say, as you're going through midlife and going through perimenopausal symptoms, because, you know, you may have mood swings, you may have hot flashes. See, these are some of the things that happen. It hasn't happened to you yet, but it does happen to everybody. You know, these changes in our hormones really cause things such as, and it's a wide range of symptoms, such as hot flashes, not sleeping well at night, mood swings in particular, dryness. There's vaginal dryness. There are so many strange symptoms, crawling sensation on the skin. I could go on and on, but they're very bothersome. And I think that not sleeping is probably one of the most bothersome symptoms. And there are things that we can do that can be helpful. And they are lifestyle changes. There are some dietary changes we can make. And I like to focus on those instead of focusing on our midlife bellies and losing weight. I wish that every doctor would help and provide a roadmap of some behaviors that would be helpful for us instead of just focusing on weight.
Nissy, if someone out there is listening, they might go, oh, so when you say dietary changes, is the goal to manage your weight? Is it to lose weight? Like somebody might be thinking, okay, so I'm going to go see Erica and that's what we're going to talk about. But what I'm more hearing you say, unless I'm wrong, is it's more to manage the symptoms and to help you with getting through this in a way that maybe the mood swings aren't as great or the symptoms aren't as bad. Is that more of what I'm hearing?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, may I say thank you for clarifying that? Yeah, there's your psychologist hat. Thank you so much. You know, I embrace what I call intuitive eating, which is a non-diet approach, which means that you're really learning to listen to your body's sense of hunger and fullness and satisfaction and finding foods that are both enjoyable as well as nourishing. And so you're right. If I say dietary changes, people might assume that I'm talking about diets, but I'm really not. I'm talking about, for example, if someone is symptomatic with hot flashes, we have some evidence that trying some phytoestrogen-containing foods such as soy foods or chickpeas or lentils, that these may be helpful in managing some of the symptoms. And I always tell people to think about adding, not subtracting. I'm going to actually say that again. Adding, not subtracting. So there are many, many things that can be helpful in someone who is symptomatic. And let me just first say that doctors do evaluate whether someone is in need of taking what we call hormone replacement therapy. And that also has been villainized in the media. People used to think I'm going to get breast cancer. There was a large study that was done. And one of the early reports was that hormone replacement therapy increased the rates of breast cancer. But that's just not true. The study was re-looked at, and some people really have severe symptoms and do benefit from having hormone replacement therapy. So I just want to make that point. But I, you know, sort of before we go there, it's worth thinking about, are there certain foods that we can add, certain supplements we can take rather than taking anything out of our diet that might be helpful with symptom management? And, it, you know, it also really depends on what symptom a person is struggling with. So someone might be struggling with hot flashes and not sleeping, and maybe having some soy foods might be helpful. Someone might be struggling with really severe mood swings, and there might be some other vitamin or supplements that we'd recommend. So it's really, I want to make a point, it's very individual. I don't really want to be giving out general recommendations for different nutrients, different vitamins and minerals. I do have a wonderful handout that goes over some examples of foods like fruits and vegetables can be very helpful in, for example, when we go through perimenopause, we tend to get constipated. And so I think it's important to have dietary fiber in, you know, for example, having fruits and vegetables and having whole grains, which is, by the way, a reason that we should not be on a diet. I have so many people who, you know, I don't want to say the names of the diets, I don't want to trigger anyone, but know that these kinds of diets that are out there are really the opposite of what are going to be helpful as we go through these perimenopausal symptoms. We need dietary fiber from whole grains, and we need dietary fiber from fruits and vegetables, and thinking about having legumes, nuts and seeds, all of this sort of whole foods diet can be very helpful. So again, I'm not saying to eliminate something, but I'm saying to add. I hope that makes more sense.
No, you do. And I, you know, it's interesting when people hear the word diet, sometimes they think like, oh, see, it's a diet, but no, that's not what you're saying, right? It's more like, how do you eat? Right. You don't
exactly,
go on a diet.
Exactly.
It's like, what does it look like in terms of what you're eating in the day?
Exactly. It, you know, for some people, we want to really focus on heart health. As we get older, we tend to have a higher risk of heart disease. And this has nothing to do with menopause, actually. It's more about aging. And so I like to tell people at midlife, you know, it's a good time to evaluate your overall health and wellness. So let's look at, see what kinds of foods might be helpful for heart health. I say, do you like to have fish? You know, probably helpful to try to include some foods that fatty fish, or it's the idea of having more omega-3 fatty acids, which is important for heart health. And if someone doesn't like having those foods, they don't like fish, or they don't like there are other plant sources of these omega-3s, that's where we might recommend a supplement. So again, all these things are just really talking about a general balanced diet overall. For osteoporosis prevention. You know, as we get older, we may have more brittle bones. It's important to be thinking about our calcium and our vitamin D intake. And by the way, it's been a year now since this pandemic, and so many of us are inside more than we're outside. And so it's always worth thinking about getting your vitamin D status checked with a physician to know if you are adequate, because a lot of people have reported decreased intake of vitamin D because we're not out in the sun. The sun, when it goes onto our skin, we manufacture vitamin D. So that's just one little point I want to make. It's that it's worth evaluating what your particular vitamin D is. And, you know, just including dairy products in the diet, which is also a really good source of calcium and vitamin D for the bones. Yeah.
No, I think this is so important what you're saying, because like I had mentioned to you, like one big turning point for me in my recovery was meeting with somebody who explained to me that food has a purpose for my health, my physical mm-hmm. well-being, my emotional well-being. It's not something to be scared of or fear or feel guilty mm-hmm. about eating. It's necessary. And, you know, now I look at food and I'm like, oh, okay, how's this going to help me with my health, and how am I going to feel after, like physically and emotionally? Can I think clearer? And so everything you're saying is great, because, you know, when you're saying adding to what you're eating, right, mm-hmm. not taking away, because mm-hmm. diets are mm-hmm. really about like restriction and absolutely. Depriving yourself.
You know, Christina, you're bringing me to an important point that I'm glad you reminded me, that dietary fat is not to be feared. Dietary fat is a very important component of our hormone health. We need dietary fat to make hormones. And so it is so important to not restrict that food in particular. So for example, having nuts and seeds in our meal pattern, having, you know, olive oil and other kinds of oils, and not being afraid of them, avocados, such an important component of our overall, you know, pattern of eating. And I don't want to use them for diet again. So I'm saying our pattern of eating, again, not to be afraid of them, but to add them because they're so good for us. And you know what? They add satisfaction and satiety. They're filling, and they make us feel good. Yeah. So I hope that makes sense.
No, perfect. And, you know, I hear this too, and I don't know if you do, but people say, okay, that's great and all, but then if I eat everything that maybe makes my body healthy and makes me feel good, and it's all nutrition and all of this stuff, great, but then I gain weight. And then I get told from my doctor, like, oh, your BMI is too high, or I don't like the way my clothes fit. Now I've done all this, but now I can't fit in any of my clothes. I don't like the way I look. So how do I lose weight and eat all these things? And you know, you and I talked a little bit before about this concept of health at every size that's out there. And maybe some people don't know what that is, or they have misinformation about it. But I don't know mm-hmm. if you find people kind of coming in with that issue with you, kind of this, like, mm-hmm. I want to not gain weight, but I do want to be physically healthy. But maybe they've been on so many diets that once they do start actually getting nutrition mm-hmm. into their body, I mean, mm-hmm. it's natural that they're not going to stay, you know, the way they were when they're restricting and not eating mm-hmm. enough.
Absolutely. Listen, this is the world that we live in, sends a message that only one size is acceptable. And it's a very harmful message, because people really do come in all sizes and shapes. We have diversity. There is size diversity in the world. There's color diversity. There's height diversity. We're all meant to be different. And if someone has been restricting their food, been on diets, if someone's been suppressing their weight below what their body is meant to be, that, yeah, when you start to eat in a way that is satisfying and nourishing, it's possible you're going to gain some weight. And that's really normal and natural. And I think we need to stop focusing on weight and really look at behaviors. Again, I'm going to say this, behaviors that are within our control, because everyone has different situations. So this health at every size you mentioned before, it's a movement. It's a philosophy. It's a social justice philosophy. And it really helps us to have an inclusive, respectful community to understand that people really do come in all shapes and sizes. It celebrates body diversity. It honors differences in size and age and race, ethnicity, gender, ability, sexual, I'm going to keep reading, sexual orientation, religion, class, all human attributes. And, you know, it's really about valuing our bodies, knowledge, and our lived experience, and finding ways of moving our bodies that feel good, eating flexibly, eating in a way that values pleasure and honors our internal signals of hunger and fullness. We really need to respect that everyone is meant to be different. And so that's really what health at every size means. It means that we really strive to find good health in whatever body we're in, our here and now body, with whatever abilities that we have. So for us, if we're able to move in ways that feel good, that's wonderful. That's going to help us with our physical health, with our mental health. If we're eating in a way that nourishes and satisfies our body, we're going to end up where our body's meant to be. You know, and we really all do have genetic set point weights. You know, I always like to talk about, you know, I'm 5 feet tall. You can't see me because we're doing this podcast. I'm actually 5 feet and shrinking. You know, I can't be 5'10". You know, that would be impossible. That's just my genetics made me this height, just like my genetics gave me my particular shape. And I tend to look like my mother. I tend to look like my grandmother. You know, we have these genetics and they really influence our body weight more than we give it credit for, more than we think. So I really want people to think on that for a minute. Like, if you wore a size 8 shoe, you wouldn't imagine that you'd want to put in, you know, your foot into a size 6 shoe. And, you know, it's the same principle. If your body is meant to be a certain size, you know, that's about acceptance and honoring your body's natural genetic set point weight. I hope that makes sense. I feel like I talked a lot of things.
No, that makes complete sense. And, you know, I preach this all day long. So everything you're saying, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. But I think that's the problem. I always kind of have a joke with most of my patients that and it's kind of like in the dog world, you know, if a Rottweiler's looking at a Chihuahua going, hey, you know, I think if I stop eating or I diet enough, I'll look like you. It's kind of like, no, like mm-hmm. Rottweilers are beautiful and wonderful in and of themselves. They're not meant to be Chihuahuas and vice versa. But yet in the human world, we're doing that all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's awful.
It exactly. And I use those examples also with my clients. I always talk about poodles, like where, you know, if someone is meant to be, you know, a Great Dane, they're not going to look like a poodle. It's impossible. It's virtually impossible. And then I go to the example of the shoe. You can't wear a size 6 if your foot's really a size 8. And that's what, right. That's what diet culture wants us to do. It wants us to shift, change our bodies. To according to what standards? You know, the standard really should be what our body is designed, how our body's designed, our bone structure and our genetics. You know, we all have, again, different shapes and sizes. I'm going to just keep saying that over and over.
And no, that's really, but I think it's great, you know, mm-hmm. You get it in the head, because there is so many messages. And I think, you know, they come from all over. They're not just coming from, you know, social media. Like you said, you go into the doctors and you get the BMI, and especially if a woman's going through if somebody's going through menopause, then, you know, she might get a message of, okay, now you've gained weight and what does that mean? And not being in the context of, hey, this is a natural, normal occurrence in menopause. Like you said, you've had some people tell you like the message is don't gain weight, don't do this, but actually that might be detrimental to their health rather than actually something that's just meant to happen and actually more healthy for the body physically and emotionally. So,
Exactly. I wish that the message was, hey, you're going through midlife. You're going through this amazing change, just like adolescence. It's like a second adolescence. How can we approach this time with compassion, with good humor? What can we do to take care of our bodies? You know, what I didn't mention, and I really should have mentioned it earlier, is that, and I'm going to just use the term women just to make it easier. We're going through this time where we may or may not have kids. We may or may not have parents that we're taking care of. We're kind of the sandwich generation. So it's a period of time where there's so much going on. I mean, I'm thinking about the pandemic also, with having kids at home and thinking about school. But the stress of taking care of everybody else really leaves a woman exhausted and not thinking about taking care of herself. And that's really problematic. And so I always talk about this notion of self-care, which, you know, it's a word that it's often said too much, but it's really perfect in this situation. If you can't take care of yourself first, you're not going to be able to help anyone else. You can't pour from an empty cup. So I wish the doctors would say, you know what, you're aging, your body's going through this wonderful time. Start to think about what you can do for yourself. How can you get more sleep? Would it be helpful to try meditating? Would it be helpful to try to find a way of moving your body that feels good for you? And again, being so compassionate if it's not a possibility. You know, everyone's circumstance is different, but midlife is a really stressful time. I was thinking to my, when it happened to me, I was, oh my goodness, I had my mother and my mother-in-law both sick and going from one hospital to the next. I had kind of challenging kids who were in high school. And I remember having hot flashes and not sleeping and not really understanding. No one explained this to me. No one told me how challenging a time this was going to be. And, you know, it's because of this challenging time in our lives that some women would look to be on a diet, to want to control things. But unfortunately, it backfires. And so I want to just give the message that think about taking care of yourself in ways other than focusing on intentional weight loss and diets. Lifestyle things. Can you do some stress management? Can you find a way to just breathe, find some time for breathing during the day, just a little bit of mindfulness? Try to find foods that you enjoy. And, you know, also have some compassion because you may be too stressed out to do some cooking. You know, it's a really stressful time. I just want to say, do the best you can. And that's really it. Listen to yourself and not to the messages that everyone's going to be trying to send you. I hope that makes sense.
No, that's fantastic. And, you know, I hope for anyone out there who's listening and going through this right now, just maybe if you need to, there's a lot of information, maybe kind of rewinding or, you know, listening to this again, because Eric, you've provided such amazing information and I know it's very helpful, but it is a lot to kind of take in because it's so counter to what we hear every day. And a lot of it's new information that I don't think is discussed enough. So I really appreciate everything you're sharing. You know, and I don't know, you know, as we're ending here, if there's any last words or anything you want to share with everyone out there who's listening today.
I think the most important thing I want to share is to really have some compassion for yourself. We don't have enough of that. And it's a challenging time. And we do not talk about it enough. I, if you can, you know, talk about it with your sisters or your mom, your grandma, if she's alive, you know, just to find out what it was like for them, because everyone approaches this period of time differently. Some people go through the perimenopause into menopause and have no symptoms. They breeze through it. Others really suffer. And so, you know, I also want to say, don't suffer in silence. If you're struggling with any symptoms, ask your doctor. You know, there is nothing wrong with having medication if it's needed. You know, I don't want to give too much information. So I always say, just ask your doctor what's appropriate. There's a lot of different options, not just, you know, supplements, as I was saying before. There's a lot of different options. There are pharmaceutical options and they can be very good. So don't suffer alone. That's what I really want to say. Don't suffer in silence.
Fantastic. Okay. And I'm sure that after listening today, people will want some way to find you or get in contact with you. Would you be willing to share a website or free information or any social media so people can do that?
Absolutely. I have a website. It's www.ericaleon.com. And I have a lot of information on this non-diet approach to dealing with perimenopause and menopause. I have a handout. In fact, it's a download. It's free on my website. And it's 7 non-diet strategies to help you get through this perimenopause into menopause. So I invite you to look at that. It goes over some of the dietary guidelines that I mentioned earlier. Again, not using a diet approach, but what I call a weight-inclusive approach, promoting what I call intuitive eating, which I'm sure you've all heard Christina talk about, intuitive eating. So yeah, find my website, and I'm on Instagram. You can find me all over. I'm on Facebook. So yeah, I invite you to come and just dive a lot of additional information that can help you learn more about menopause. So thank you so much, Christina, for having me.
Thank you. I really appreciate you being here. Wonderful, wonderful information. And anyone, don't worry if you didn't get all that down. I'll have all of her contact information available in the show notes on my website. So as always, make sure you head over there after the show. And all right, everyone, thank you again for being here and listening. And as always, I hope you enjoyed what you listened to. And if you did, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And you can also go to my website at behindthebitepodcast.com, where you can get my free 9-week email course and start your journey to making peace with your struggles with food and your body. Until next time, to your health, everyone.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.